Eric Boghossian is an actor, playwright, and novelist of Armenian descent. He was a Pulitzer Prize finalist for his play Talk Radio and is the recipient of the Berlin Film Festival's Silver Bear Award, as well as three Obie Awards and the Drama Desk. In addition to his celebrated work in the theater and on screen, he has authored three novels. His latest work, though, is a nonfiction account of the assassins who hunted down the perpetrators of the Armenian genocide. The book brings us to 1921, where a tightly knit band of killers set out to avenge the deaths of almost 1 million victims. The name of the new book is Operation Nemesis, the assassination plot that avenged the Armenian genocide. It's a great pleasure to welcome Eric Boghossian to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks. Nice to be back.
What led you to this subject, to want to explore it more fully?
I had heard about an Armenian assassinating one of the Turkish leaders in 1921 after the genocide. I actually didn't even think it was a true story the first time I heard it. Then I read it in Samantha Power's book, A Problem from Hell. She mentions it. So I did some investigation. I thought I would write a movie maybe about this one assassination, only to find out that, in fact, there were multiple assassinations of Turkish leaders in 1921 and 1922. In fact, a good chunk of the Turkish leadership was taken out by Armenian assassins in those 2 years. They called themselves Operation Nemesis. And I didn't know of any book about this that was published in the United States. There was one translation of a kind of scholarly book out of France. And so I decided to put this together and get it out there.
At what point in the history did the name Operation Nemesis start to form, that there actually became an operation to work on this?
The decision to pursue these assassinations was made in 1919 at the end of the war, end of World War I. It was made in Armenia by the leadership there. It was a secret decision. They decided to finance this and make a list of the Turkish leaders they would assassinate. The center of operations then moved to Massachusetts, of all places. And I believe, this is all top secret stuff, so we can only go by, you know, the best guess in some cases. But I believe that the operation was named Operation Nemesis from the HQ in Boston. And from there, they sent their killers all over Europe, to Paris, Berlin, Constantinople, Tbilisi, and began to assassinate these, pretty much the core of the leadership of the leadership that had pursued this genocide.
This is a group, as you point out in the book, that was self-appointed and also very small in number.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody in wasn't more than, it was probably about a dozen key figures, six of the organizers, most of them operating here in the United States, raising money and sort of giving direction, and then about six key gunmen on the ground in Europe. But there were also people spying. It kind of shaded off in the fringes, because people would be giving assistance without knowing the specifics of the conspiracy. For instance, tipping off the conspiracy where they had seen Turks, or they had noticed there was a coffee shop, let's say, where people were congregating who were Turkish. And then from there, they would then spy on those guys, try and figure out who among them were former leaders and if they were on the list, and then they would follow them and knock them off. Now, it should be pointed out that these assassins felt that they were meting out a punishment that had already been meted out. These men had all been convicted in absentia, in trials in Constantinople, in 1919. So The thing was, they weren't there, so they couldn't be executed. But Talat Pasha, Enver Pasha, Jamal Pasha, Said Halim Pasha, these were all the big leaders. There had been trials in Turkey, and they had decided that these men had committed war crimes and were and were convicted.
So in 1921, when Talat Pasha was shot dead by an Armenian student, the student is acquitted, and obviously the defense that he was overwhelmed with rage at the murder of his family. And
he said that he had been in the desert and witnessed his family massacred, particularly his mother, but he hadn't been there. He most of what he said in court was a fabrication.
He did not witness the dance.
He wasn't a student. He was a former soldier, and he was specifically, he said that he accidentally came across Talat when in fact he had been tracking him for months, trying to find him in Berlin. And then he did find him, and he followed him one day and shot him, killed him.
So what was the impetus, do you believe, for him? Because it certainly would be a similar reaction to someone who obviously did lose their family.
Well, he lost his family. He just didn't witness. What he said in court was that he had been there when there was a massacre, and he had been left for dead. That isn't what actually happened. What happened was that his family was from a town called Erzincan, which had 25,000 Armenians living in it prior to 1915. The entire Armenian population had been taken out and murdered. But this man was away fighting, Sogomon Tetlerian was away fighting in World War I when this happened. He was actually on the Russian-Turkish front fighting on the side of the Russians. And he came back to his town to find that everyone had been gone. The information was incomplete at the time. And then he went looking for his family, couldn't find them, and eventually joined up with this conspiracy to avenge their death. So he knew they died, but he hadn't witnessed their dying. I mean, there's a slight difference here, but the difference is important because in court, if they believed that these men had been tracking, or in the case of Sogomon, that he wasn't a student, that he had been specifically tracking Talat Pasha to assassinate him, they would never have acquitted him. But they did acquit him because they felt this was before they used the term PTSD, but that was the way they saw where he was at. They felt that he had been traumatized by the experience of seeing his mother killed right before his eyes and the rest of his family.
Your story, of course, as you grew up very much with a spotlight and an importance on your Armenian heritage, and you say if at a very young age, 4 years old, told by your grandfather, if you ever meet a Turk, kill him.
Yeah, well, my grandfather was a survivor from those rough regions in eastern Ottoman Empire, eastern Turkey today, where for him to have gotten out alive was, I actually don't know how he did it. His father had been killed, and in fact, his wife's father had also been killed by the Turks during this time. Yeah, he told me these stories, but I was so young, I really didn't know what to do with them. I mean, I was growing up in the suburbs in Massachusetts, and I'm hearing these hellish tales of violence, and many Armenians just didn't talk about them, but my grandfather did. And it was only until I was much older, I think probably in my 30s, when I really decided to unpack all of this and take another look at it and say, okay, what actually did happen and what was going on? Somewhere along the line, that's when I learned about Operation Nemesis. And I thought that this would be a great project, not only to tell people about it, but also for myself to explore what exactly was the Armenian genocide. In fact, further than that, what was the Ottoman Empire? What is Armenia? I didn't know much about any of this. Even this whole southern flank of the war, which usually the war gets covered on, France, Germany fighting during World War I, but there was a huge amount of fighting going on in the Ottoman Empire, and it was very significant because it led to the Ottoman Empire losing all these oil lands that today constitute the Arab territories. And I mean, today the fighting is still going on today. And ISIS, Mosul, all of that is territory that was part of this front at that time.
When you think about the overall genocide, and as we obviously reflect in this 100th anniversary of one of the 20th century's greatest atrocities, to this day it's still not acknowledged as such by several national governments. What does that say about the event and ultimately where we've come over a century?
Well, I'm not a genocide expert. The thing that I know the most about is, of course, this situation, the Armenian situation. The Armenians were Christians, as well as the Greeks and other Christian groups, such as the Syriac Christians, were living peaceably in the Ottoman Empire. There were a few radicals in their population, but this was a lot of people, 2 million people, 3 million people living there. And the Turkish government at the time, the Young Turks, the CUP, made this decision that under the fog of war, they would eradicate all of these Christians because it would somehow fix their country. It would Turkify the country. It would homogenize it or ethnically cleanse it. Because they did that, and they did do it, and they did it pretty successfully, there were almost no Christians left in Turkey after the war, then they began to build this new nation of Turkey, which was founded in 1923 by Kemal Atatürk. Basically, what had happened was this new nation was built on the blood and bones and treasure of Armenians and Greeks and Nestorians and other Christian people, Jews, and they don't want to go back and they don't want to talk about that. I think it maybe is too fresh. I think they will someday have to talk about it, but legally, as long as they don't admit to it, they don't have to take the next step, which is, this isn't that long ago. People have deeds to property. People have, they know where their property was that was taken from them because, of course, a great deal of property, gold, wealth was taken from these people, and people want reparations. And this is all legally sound reasoning, but Turkey refuses to acknowledge that this genocide happened. So we're stuck in this twilight zone. And it's absurd at this point because the American government, the United States government, which is an ally of Turkey, refuses to use the term officially in the State Department, or the president won't use it. Even Samantha Power won't use it now. And she wrote a whole book about it that was she got the Pulitzer Prize for. They do this for strategic reasons, but it's at this point absurd because, of course, when President Obama was a senator, he very eloquently described what had happened and he used the term genocide. It's reached a point of absurdity, especially since the whole world has acknowledged, or every historian has acknowledged that this took place. So hopefully with continued attention, it will eventually, this has to fall apart. I mean, otherwise Turkey can just make a choice to be a second-class country forever and never really enter the family of nations because they insist on this protecting this vast crime.
You spoke early on about, as you launched into the subject and started looking into it, of considering the possibilities of doing something with your work in theater or in film. Has that been realized? Do you still want to do that?
Well, the original story was fairly straightforward, the story of that Sogaman told in court, and I thought that could make a movie very easily. The more complex story of Operation Nemesis was harder to tell in film, and of course films do cut corners when they're telling stories and aren't always... Lawrence of Arabia was nothing like the guy. He didn't look like Peter O'Toole, I guarantee you that. So we live in a world where history gets manufactured by films. Now that the book has come out, there is interest in making a film. And, of course, I can go in that direction now because the book is there. If there were to be a film, they could refer back to the book to get all the details. My goal was to write the most accurate book I could and a very readable book so people could I wanted to be very interesting. That was my goal. It was sort of like a very long magazine article, and you would say, oh, I just never knew this. And that includes a lot of Armenians. I really didn't know that much about, where is Armenia anyway, and what was the Ottoman Empire? What's a sultan? I mean, we use the term, but we don't even know what it means.
Right.
So this was all part of the project originally.
obviously
make
the
movie, sure.
The book is out, and we're thrilled to learn that in July you're coming to our region at the Williamstown Theater Festival to star in Daniel Goldfarb's world premiere, Legacy. What led you to that project?
We did some readings of the play. It's a great play. It's he's a terrific writer. It's dramatically very sound. I speak from, I don't know, I guess the fact that I write plays myself,
right.
I kind of look at that part of it. It's a great topic that is deceptively simple as the play starts and it gets more and more complex. And you realize he's deftly painted the characters into corners that put them in very high emotional situations. Wonderful for an actor. I mean, that's basically why it's a great role. And I get to work with other actors who I really love and respect, Jessica Hecht and Hallie Pfeiffer, and I think we're just getting the doctor now. I don't know whether that's cast yet or not, but that's the characters. But you know, the thing about ensemble is you look at who else you're going to be acting with, because the better the actors, it's like tennis or something. You can play a better game when you have better people to play with.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing both you and Jessica Hecht on stage. That seems like a lot of fun.
The best.
Absolutely. Yeah. The play is Legacy, and it opens July 1st on the NECO stage at the Williamstown Theater Festival. Meanwhile, right now, the book Operation Nemesis, the assassination plot that avenged the Armenian genocide, is out, published by Little Brown. Eric Bogosian, a great pleasure to have you back on the program. Thank you very much, as always.
Thanks, Joe.
Again, the title of the book is Operation Nemesis. It's published by Little Brown, by Eric Bogosian. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.